Quality over quantity wins every single time. I don't want to be the thumbnail guy. I don't want to be chasing likes. I don't want to be chasing follows. Anybody can go out and make 10 grand. The last thing you want to be is a person that pumps cash but has no ability to retain it. Even the richest, most successful person in the world, they have something that they're lacking. If you have nothing to provide, why am I going to waste time with you? Bitcoin's a little bit of a crazy situation right now.
Yeah, what do you think this future holds for?
Bitcoin is no longer what it used to be.
What's up, guys, and welcome back to First Things Durst. I can't even pronounce my own show.
Shit, right.
That's a good start. It's been a while, but we are back with the one, the only Luke Belmar. How are you doing?
Brother, it's good to see you. Finally, first time meeting. I've been a big fan of your work for a long time. I don't look like it, but eventually.
You're one of those guys who's like, you've been on my radar for a while. We have like mutual friends in common.
Yes.
You're doing the social media thing. You've popped up and you've been... You know, you're an intriguing guy, an international man of mystery.
Like you, brother, except I'm not an ultra influencer like you, bro.
Yeah, but you're getting there, though.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of started off the entire influencer journey, or at least posting content. My entire premise behind it was I wanted to develop my business and establish it in a situation whereby I could actually focus on content full time. You probably know it better than anybody. Mm. Like, content is a full time job. So I appointed a CEO inside Capital Club. I got my entire team set up.
And when did you start this?
2019.
Okay.
So 2019, I launched Capital Club after doing e-commerce, got into crypto, kind of rolled over, did a couple things there, went well. And I was like, I want to do the content thing, because my entire premise with content was I wanted people to see what it was like to live as an entrepreneur, but in an authentic way. Because so many people are like, hey, here are the cars, here are the women, here are the travel. But a lot of people don't talk about the grind. They don't talk about the hardships. They don't talk about the what I like to call the data sets that you actually unlock in business. And my entire philosophy was very simple. I wanted to be the best version of myself and not fake what I would put out on the internet. I wanted to be a version of myself that I would be proud of. And once I was in that situation where I'd be like, you know, I can showcase this version of myself to the world, I turned on the camera.
Did you find it weird being on camera for the first time?
No, because I was doing Instagram lives back in 2018 with like 14 people watching me, 13 people watching me, 10 people. But it was like the e-com guys back in the day. It was a small kind of niche. So I was kind of used to it. I would do 4-hour Instagram lives. Like, they would have the 1-hour resets and I would just reset them and reset them and reset them.
To 14 people?
14 people, bro. Yeah, because it was like my small little e-com community, and that just kind of grew. Now it's like 4,000 or 5,000, 6,000 people watching on an Instagram live. So it's pretty
I've noticed pretty with your following, you have a very good ratio of the people that are engaging and liking your stuff and watching your videos as well. Because you have, even with YouTube, it's not like you put out loads of content, but it seems to be very much high quality.
Quality over quantity wins every single time, because... Mm. Quality, I don't want to be a bitch to the algorithm. You know, I don't want to be the thumbnail guy. I don't want to be chasing likes. I don't want to be chasing follows. I want to incorporate this into my life. And I don't want this idea of having to be a slave to posting on YouTube or posting on Instagram every single time. And I think people resonate with that. It's not because I'm creating content to acquire new subscribers and new followers. I'm creating content for the people that have already subscribed. So I've kind of taken YouTube in an entire different approach. Instead of being like, okay, let me grow my channel, I've been like, let me honor the people that have actually subscribed to my content and give them the best version of myself. That's why I think people return.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen so many people, they're almost selling their soul just to get those likes and get those shares. Like, I've seen it happen on YouTube, especially with Instagram. Like, since the introduction of Reels, people are literally just copying other people doing this like stupid stuff they would never normally
pouring
do
themselves.
Yeah. And like, it, sometimes it does work. Like, you get the likes, you get the comments and the shares, but it's just like, at what cost?
I don't want to be an actor, bro.
Yeah.
Acting is so fucking tiring and expensive. I want to just be me. And in that refinement of being myself, I want people to resonate with it. I want to be authentic. And I think with that authenticity, I think that's the new meta when it comes to content. And what people are actually looking for. People are looking for authentic people that they resonate with. They don't want idols. Mm. They want people that they can share something in common with. Yeah, you sure, of course, can have people that inspire you and stuff like this, but if you can have somebody at levels with you and it's like, you know what, homie, like I got you. Like I resonate with what you're doing, but here's another level of the game. Mm. You know, like I can sit down with you and I'm like, okay, perfect. I need to develop my health in a better aspect. I need to develop my physique. But when I perceive you as a homie. I don't look at you like, oh, here's this influencer, Mike Thurston, like 1.1 million. Oh, crazy. I don't perceive that because I perceive you as human because you're human and you come off that way. So it's also the persona that you've built online. It's not a persona that you've built. It's you. Mm. And I think that that's what resonates with people is the fact that you are the best version of yourself and you're showcasing that on a daily basis without having to whore for likes, without having to post bullshit little dancing videos to get likes. Yeah. And I think that that's what attracts high quality followers and people that fuck with us.
Was there a point in your life where you became fully comfortable with who you were and you were like, you know what? I get it. Like, I understand life. I'm happy with who I am. Was there an age?
I think it's a process. Mm. I think it's a process of maturity and understanding that you're always growing and that you're always learning and that you have to treat yourself with grace and compassion. Because if you're not a lover of yourself, if you're not a fan of yourself, who else is going to be a fan of you? Mm. If I can't look at myself in the mirror and be like, you know what, Luke, you have shortcomings, but you also have great things. I treat myself like I would treat somebody else, right? Because I'm in a relationship with me. It's not like, oh, I'm just myself. I'm in a relationship with me. So I go through hardships. I go through difficulties. But when I interact with myself, I try to cheer myself up. Like, hey, dude, you're doing well. Like you're crushing. Even if I'm not crushing, right? Like this week I had like a big tax bill come. Right? Big fucking tax bill.
No, you can't escape that.
Right, I can't. Big fucking tax bill. But this is a tax bill from a couple of years ago, right? So
this is, you Canadian-American?
American. I have my American citizenship. I'm originally from Argentina, but okay. I have my American citizenship. But the situation that arose was, I'm like, I think taxes that are due or whatever, it was like almost $1 million. And I'm like, ah, oh, fuck.
In taxes,
yeah. So it was. So I get the call from my accountant. Cool. Like, you wouldn't have to experience that because you're here, bro. You're here in Dubai. Like, good job.
Well, it's good for now. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen in the future.
I moved to Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is now 4% income tax. So it's the only tax haven for Americans or people that have U.S. citizenships.
But, so, but can you escape it fully?
If I give up my citizenship.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But that's also like a situation whereby I need to have multiple passports, which is, I have a couple, but I'm working on them. But I was like, my CPA calls me and I'm like, okay, it gives me the good news. And it's like almost $1 million in taxes for whatever the year was. And I'm like, okay, I'm sitting there and I could have done things better. I could have appropriated money in different ways. But instead of beating myself over the head and being like, you idiot, like you fucked up. Or you could have done this better. I look at myself, I'm like, all right, it's part of the game. If it wasn't fun, if it wasn't interesting, then life wouldn't be worth it. So I treat myself with grace and compassion. And I think if people can sense that in them, that you know what, you're learning, you're developing, you're growing, that if you mess up, if you fuck up, if you fall, that it's okay. It's the same thing, I guess you would say with experience in the gym. When you mess up on the last set or like when the weights, you don't hit your full set, right? And you finish at 8 instead of 12. You don't look at yourself, oh, you idiot. You didn't finish. You're like, okay, perfect. It's part of the process. And I treat life the same exact way. I look at my shortcomings and my difficulties and I'm like, I'm comfortable with that. Like, I'm okay with that. My process is very simple. I plan, I execute, and then I iterate. So I plan my process, I execute my process, and then I iterate. And the iteration is where I become better. Mm-hmm. And unless you have that mental framework of, I'm getting better and better and better and better. Like you were training 14 years, bro. Like when you looked at yourself 14 years ago, maybe you could have imagined who you became today. But in the process of becoming who you are today, you don't look back at who you were 14 years ago. You're like, ah, oh, this was a nobody. This was nothing. It's that journey. And I look at my personal development, who I am as a person, the same way. Maybe 20 years from now, I'll look at myself today and be like, oh, I was a kid. I was a chump. Yeah, the same thing, right?
I think I would look at myself. And exactly. Think the same thing so when I'm like 40.
Yeah. So it's that process. And I'm like, but it's okay. It's the part of the journey. It's the process. And I enjoy it.
Wow. Yeah. You seem very self-aware. Have you always been self-aware?
I am. I think it's self-realization. Mm. I like to realize, instead of being self-aware, being like, oh, I'm aware of my surroundings, I like to. Andrew says it. Andrew has a famous word. He calls it perspicacity, right? The ability to perceive that which cannot be seen. So I like to be in a state of self-realizing things. So I'm constantly aware of my habits. I'm constantly aware of my mental thoughts. I'm constantly aware of people that I hang out with. And in that, you kind of develop an awareness for the world. It's not an intuitive awareness. It's a proactive awareness that is actually you realizing that things are kind of taking place. I'm not going to steal Andrew's word, but it's a good word.
So going back to when you were growing up, I want to figure out this journey, this process of how you've got to where you are today. You say you grew up in
Argentina.
What was that like?
Poor.
Yeah, I can't. I've been there before. I was there on a rugby tour when I was 16, and I saw that there are some affluent areas, but the majority of it is not.
Yeah. So grew up in a rural town. I think like 15,000 people. Parents, normal, regular people. Never had a ton, but never like was lacking things. But, you know, the framework in South America is very much like family driven. It's kind of like the Middle East. So it's all about family. It's all about, you know, your circle. In the West, like North America, it's very much like, oh, fuck your family, kind of do whatever you want. I don't know how it is in the UK, but in South America, it's very much like family and loyalty. But at the age of 16, I looked at what my parents were doing, working regular jobs. And I was like, I don't want to do this. Mm. My brother was working in a gas station. I was working in a hotel, you know, like mopping floors. That was my job. Like, that's what I was doing. I was like, I cannot do this. And through a family member, I actually got a flight for free sitting where the flight attendants sit. And that was my flight to America, right? So I didn't get a coach. I didn't sit like whatever it is where people sit. I sat where the flight attendants sit. And I was like at the age of 16 with $200 in a suitcase that my parents gave me. I went to America and started working pressure washing basketball courts, got gigs cleaning toilets, worked at a Buffalo Wild Wings, flipping the wings in the back. And eventually, I think it was part of the self-realization. I always knew that there was more. So I was always studying. I was always about self-education. I was always reading. And at the age of, I think 19 or 20, maybe a little more, 21, I was doing side gigs. I eventually got introduced with e-commerce and crypto through a series of friends and events, and it kind of panned out.
Yeah. I've done a bit of research. You made quite a bit of money off crypto.
Yes. A lot.
And some other investments as well.
Yes.
So you're good. Would you say that was more luck or like a well executed and planned action?
I think it's a combination of both. This idea of luck can only be perceived as a person that may not have the right information, right? So yeah, I maybe got introduced to the word Bitcoin when Bitcoin was $600. That was lucky, but actualizing and taking action on what I did with that information wasn't luck. Mm. So I started studying, researching, buying books on the stock market, buying books on finance, understanding what was this ecosystem, investing money into it. I remember, dude. So in the United States, when you're buying at a restaurant, and you get a waiter, you get cash tips, right? So if somebody buys a meal, they have like 10, 15, 20% tip for the waiter. Usually that tip isn't cash, right? That's how it works. Yeah. You get to take that home every single day. You don't have to wait for like a paycheck at the end of the month. That's the cool thing about waiting tables. I never worked a job where I got paid a salary. I was always like, I got to hunt, kill, and whatever I make that day, that's what I have. So I would take that cash. I would go to the ATM, and you get basically your direct cash deposit. So it shows up in your bank account that same day. And I would go to an exchange called Bitstamp, which is an OG exchange. And I would go that same day and buy crypto, right? Oh, like, yeah. That's what I would do.
What year was this?
2015.
Wow.
Yeah. Long time ago.
So you were living a very humble lifestyle and you weren't
spending. I was sleeping on my brother's couch, paying him $200 a month to sleep on his couch.
Damn.
Yeah, brother.
That's smart. But what do you think of the situation with crypto now? Because I've said this before, I've actually not put any money in crypto. Mm. And I'm kind of glad I didn't, because when I was about to, that was when it was like, it was at its peak and everybody was doing it and it was too late.
That's the exact point, is when the taxi driver's talking about crypto, when your grandmother's talking about crypto, that's when you're not supposed to be doing it.
Yeah.
Everything that is unpopular is because it's not known. Mm. And how the markets tend to work is the people that are intelligent, the VCs, the market makers, the hedge funds, the people that actually have money that move the markets, they establish their layers, they establish their market buys, their orders, they build out their portfolios. And then they go to the news anchors, and then they go to the publishers, they go to Forbes, they go to CNBC, and they're like, okay, run this article, run this publishing, because they direct what? Liquidity. So they're the ones that conduct liquidity to drive up the price, and then they exit on that liquidity. So my news was very simple. It was, I think, 2020. I posted on Instagram. I had like 8,000 followers back in the day. And I said, Bitcoin's going to go to the moon. Why? Well, because the Fed started buying assets. So that basically means the Federal Reserve started buying into the market. So they printed money, started dumping into the market. They're driving liquidity. So at that point, everybody that's already positioned is positioned. They use the government, right? And this idea of COVID relief money to drive up the market, print money out of thin air, use that liquidity to boost every single market. You talk the stock market, you can talk crypto, you can talk real estate, everything went through the roof. And everybody that wasn't informed, that wasn't positioned, they ended up being the exit liquidity. So the cycle is very simple, and it repeats itself time and time again. It's everybody gets positioned early, the ones that understand. There's some sort of liquidity surge, whether it was the Fed printing new money or some sort of great news about market conditions. They run news to bring the newbies in, right? Use their paychecks or their COVID relief money, their check, whatever it is, their stimulus check. Because it was crazy. The whole stimulus check was like hundreds of billions of dollars. All that was getting deposited into accounts like Robinhood, or getting deposited into was like Cash App. And people were using that to literally buy and gamble. And at that liquidity exit, most of the big players were out of the game. And once the Fed said, we're stopping, we're no longer buying assets, it was literally the top. You can price chart the bottom of Bitcoin. People are like, oh, it's the bull run. No. I was talking to the head of the Central Bank of Albania. He said, if you correlate the price of Bitcoin or of any market, and you correlate it with what I would call the policy of the Fed, it matches the movement of the market. So people think that crypto is its own individual asset class, Bitcoin halving, whatever. And those things are valid, but simultaneously it's driven by not just market demand, but by people that move the markets. And retail does not move markets. Mm-hmm. Retail is the exit liquidity. So good thing you didn't get out. Get in the first place. But that doesn't mean that there's not going to be another cycle. So
yeah, what do you think the future holds for it?
So, Bitcoin's a little bit of a crazy situation right now. You know, they're having ETF approval. So BlackRock's in, I think Fidelity's in, and a couple other big organizations are filing to kind of get involved with Bitcoin. But Bitcoin is no longer what it used to be. So Bitcoin was this idea of autonomous, anonymous, peer-to-peer transactions and payments, especially in the US. In some countries, it's probably a little bit better. Like here in the Emirates, it's probably better. Or if you're in Hong Kong, you kind of have a little bit more freedom. But in the US, they're kind of cracking down on it. I think it's kind of just like every market, but with a little bit more volatility. So high risk, high reward. And with that high risk, you know, when you don't have a lot, sure, you can do a little moonshot, but you can also lose it. I like to play with it, but simultaneously, there's a ton of scammers in the crypto space. And that kind of gave me like a little bit of a bad taste.
Yeah, it was crazy.
If you see like the FTX shit and all that, I was like, bro, like this shit's the psyop. This it's ridiculous.
And when it was like its peak price, you get all these people coming out of nowhere saying they're a crypto expert.
Well, yeah, and it's like you're a crypto expert, and crypto's been around for what, a decade? You're not really a crypto expert. I wouldn't consider myself a crypto expert by no means. You'll never see me sell a course on how to buy and sell crypto, because most of the information is free on YouTube. But at the same time, it's literally just understanding market cycles and understanding risk and reward. So if Bitcoin is 69,000 or 64,000 or 60,000, and it's never been that price, and it's been, you know, 20,000 multiple times, is it ever going to reach $20,000 again? Yes, no, potentially. But is your objective when you're kind of trading to gamble, or is it to invest and allocate your money to grow your money? And I think the situation that a lot of people found themselves in, whether it was NFTs or buying all these bullshit meme coins, is they wanted fast money and easy come, easy go.
Yeah.
And that's why you see a lot of people leaving Dubai. Their bags are empty, bro.
Yeah. So you're in this situation. You've made the money off the crypto, other investments. You're sitting on a lot of cash.
Mostly cash. I'm sitting on 95% cash right now.
Really?
Yeah.
So you've not, no property? No.
No.
Property. Why no property?
So no property. My simple reason for no property right now is twofold. One is, and this might sound a little bit conspiracy theory, but in the United States, you don't technically own your real estate. You own the right of use. It's the same thing with the UK, right? Like, you don't own your real estate. The government can come and seize it at any moment. That's why I kind of like Bitcoin. If I own my Bitcoin, I kind of have it. And at the same time, yeah, you can get somebody that manages your money or manages your property and things of this nature. I don't like to be tied down by things. Yeah, I could go out and buy a boat. Yeah, I could go out and buy a ton of cars. Yeah, I could go buy a ton of properties. But these are all things that don't give me the flexibility to do what I love, which is what? Travel, hang out with people. I don't want phone calls of, hey, this broke down. Oh, hey, you got to fix this. Property manage shit. And as much as you can say, yo, you got a property manager. I don't fucking want a property manager. Yeah, yeah. Dude, I'm fucking 28. Like, I don't need a bunch of real estate. Let me sit on my cash. I want to be liquid. I want to be movable, flexible. And I like the markets. That's kind of my reason.
I've had that approach as well. Like, I don't want to do anything that is going to give me more headache and
stress. Exactly, bro. It's mental real estate. That's what people don't seem to understand. It's like, you only have X amount of things that you can think about during the day. Perfect. Let's say I buy some property. How much time do I have to spend allocated towards thinking about that property, getting a tenant, making sure the tenant's happy, even if I live there? Okay, perfect. I make some sort of money. But all that mental real estate, sure, I make a couple $100,000 a year on some real estate investments, whatever it may be. All that mental real estate, I can make so much more money building things. Dude, the internet is the best place in the world to make money. Why would I want to go to the real world? Yeah. Like, honestly speaking, I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but at the end of the day,
there's other options.
Bro, I had a $4 million house. I got rid of it.
Why? How much?
$4 million. Okay. I got rid of it. Why? Because it was fucking bullshit. I had a headache. Every month in Puerto Rico, every month, pipes breaking, every month, humidity, every month, people in my house, big ass 5,000 square foot house, cleaners every day, gardeners every single week, people in and out of my house. Dude, I'm like, it's not even my house. I'm living in a hotel room and I have like people that I don't even know coming and leaving out of my house all day long. I'm like, dude, I don't like this. Let me get my own crib, chill.
You had someone managing it though. And that was still.
But it's the management thing. But when I live there, now I'm in a situation where I have cleaners come every single day. I have three cleaners come to my house. I have three strangers, dude. Now I have people, my pool guy, my gardener. I don't want people there. So it's kind of like a situation where, yeah, you want people managing certain aspects of your life. But at the same time, like you, like, I like my privacy. Because I asked you, why don't you carry, like, take your video guys everywhere you go? Because you can. Because I kind of want to do my own thing sometimes. I want to just go dark. I don't want people snooping over my house, making sure, like, oh, what's this guy doing? Yeah. I don't care about that.
When
shit
I have
right
the cleaners
now.
Come to mind, I'm just like, get the fuck out, please.
That's the whole thing. It's like, I don't have my privacy. And some people may be like, oh, well, it's not a good investment. But most of you guys aren't rich. Like, the people that are commenting, the people that say stuff, it's like, oh, this is a liability. This is an asset. At the end of the day, people said the dollar was going to zero, right? The dollar was going to crash. But at the end of the day, the dollar was kind of the safest investment to be in the last 2 years. So I like to be liquid. I like to be flexible. And maybe when I get older, I'll settle down, maybe buy a ranch in Patagonia, Argentina, go buy some horses or cows, chill out there. Who knows?
Self-sustainable.
Yeah, self-sustainable. Nice and organic farms, bro.
If you had to invest in something, like if you had to put half of your money somewhere, where would you put it?
Immediately, like today?
Yeah. In like next 24 hours.
Fuck. Probably Bitcoin.
Yeah.
The price will probably fluctuate a lot, but if it was to stay somewhere, it would probably be in Bitcoin. Yeah.
I don't know. You said you're not a crypto expert. What would you say you know the most about? Like, for me, I would still say the bodybuilding, body recomposition and teaching, that is probably still the thing I know the most about. Yeah, it's funny because when I do like podcasts and stuff now, nobody really asks me about it anymore. I'm like, it's kind of like, I still know that
you guys just assume
this.
You guys just assume, or like, you don't even ask me about this shit.
And people ask me other stuff now. But in your situation, what would you say your strongest skill set is?
Digital entrepreneurship. So how to build and scale businesses online.
Okay.
100%. I've been doing it for almost 8 years now. So I've
any
done
particular
multiple,
area or just anything
in digital? General, because a lot of businesses, they have the same fundamentals, right? So you need to understand, it's the same thing, right? Plan, execute, iterate. Every business operates under three premises. It doesn't matter if you're building a fitness app. It doesn't matter if you're building an influencer page. It doesn't matter if you're running meme pages. It doesn't matter if you run e-commerce stores, supplement lines, clothing lines. You have to always plan, execute, and iterate. And there's a process to those things, right? So I've developed my internal processes and my systems, my KPIs, my teams, and those things have allowed me to iterate time and time again. And in that iteration, you can just take these models and cross-pollinate them throughout different businesses.
Mm. I would say that's something I'm trying to learn more about now.
I got you, bro.
I have the clothing company. I have the app. The app could be doing way, it's doing well, but it could be like.
For sure. You know the potential.
Because that's the thing. I was speaking to Chris Williamson about this. Like, there's some people who have this amazing skill of building the following, like building an audience, but they're terrible at monetizing it. Mm. Whereas other people are actually very good at making money, but they just have no idea how to actually build an audience. So I'm trying to, I built the audience first. All I did is provide value. I didn't really ask for much. In fact, I still think to this day, I don't sell as much as I should do with the content that I upload.
What's the mental framework as the, are you like afraid that like you'll get judged?
I think it's annoying. Mm. When I'm making my content, I'm either making it to help or entertain people. And I think there's a very fine line where if you sell too much, it starts to get annoying if you keep pushing it down people's faces. And I remember, you know, back in the day when I used to work with a load of sponsors, every time I had to do a promotion or advertise their stuff, I used to die inside. I was like, fuck this. Because you don't want to do it.
Of course,
you don't want to do it. You're only doing it because you're getting paid. So like when I see all the influencers like pushing stuff now, it's like they don't want to do this. Mm. They're doing it because they need the money. So I made a promise to myself. This was last year. I was like, I'm not working with any other companies anymore. I'm just pushing my own stuff. Because at least then if you're promoting your own product or service, it just feels more natural and more authentic.
Authenticity. Yeah. Like that is the key to anybody that wants to build a business. Because first of all, especially I would say as an influencer, there's two types of ways to make money. One, let's consider money butterflies for the sake of the illustration, right? So let's say you want to catch butterflies. Butterflies equate to dollars. There's two ways that you can gather butterflies. The first way is build a net, right? Build a massive net. It doesn't matter how optimized the net is. It doesn't matter how sophisticated it is. You always have to swing in order to catch butterflies. That's most people hustling, right? They have to clock in. They have to post. They have to sell a promo in order for them to make money, in order for them to catch butterflies. That is not efficient. That is hustling. Why? That's where most people start. Mm. But you need to develop a second skill set, which is how to attract butterflies. How do you attract butterflies? By building a garden. Now, it might sound like a foo-foo concept, but if you build a garden, that means you need to build an ecosystem. You're building an ecosystem. Now your goal is to figure out how to make it all congruent, and how to make sure people buy into that ecosystem and they don't leave to other gardens. Mm. You look at Amazon. That's a fucking garden, bro. That's a self-sustaining garden. They run, it's not just an Amazon platform. They run a plethora of platforms. Amazon AWS, IMDb. They have the Amazon Prime, eBooks. It's an ecosystem of what? Attracting money. So the concept of going from hustle to boss is instead of working in your business and catching the butterflies once you have enough, is working on your business,
yeah.
Which is kind of what I've been mastering, which is how to build and scale digital businesses. And in that situation, it's a completely different level of skill set, completely different. And the big thing that I learned when I started making my money was, I was saying it to some buddies today, I said, my big epiphany, my big humbling moment was I was a poor guy with money. And what I meant by that was my mental framework was the mental framework that I was brought in, which is you need to hustle, you need to work, you need to get a job. And I was taking that same philosophy, but just as a self-employed individual, because if I stopped working, the money would stop coming.
That's the realization I had. Like the money is good, but that's only if I'm pumping out the content on all the platforms. What happens if I stop making content?
And that's where working on the business and building a garden that is kind of self-sustaining because you have different aspects to it that cross-pollinate comes in. So you build a loyal following. Whatever, if it's a product, if it's a clothing line, if it's a subscription, whatever it may be, it applies for a plethora of niches. You work on it. Take Gymshark, for example. Mm. Gymshark is a business. They're not a clothing line. They're a business. They have a loyal fan base, but they have what? Pop-up events. They have their clothing lines.
Yeah, they just open a store in London now.
Literally, bro. They have an entire what? Ecosystem. And it's in that ecosystem that you no longer have to be present in order for money to what? Flow. And that's kind of where I've been transitioning. So it's not, I'm a poor guy with money, aka I'm broke. It's I had a poor mentality of limiting myself because if I went to the hospital, money would stop coming in. Mm-hmm. And that's not the situation that I wanted to be in. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, once again, the biggest skill set that I've developed or that I would say is my top tier kind of skill set is building and scaling digital businesses.
What do you think is the number one mistake that a lot of these entrepreneurs are making? When they think, oh, you know, they watch all these videos, Iman Gadzi, maybe they're watching you, a few other people, like, all right, okay, I'm going to start a drop shipping business or an agency. What are the biggest mistakes they tend to make?
They don't learn the fundamentals. It's so easy, bro. It's so easy to bank money. You know this. Mm-hmm. Online, anybody can go out and make 10 grand a month, literally. Yeah. But who learns taxes? Who learns budgeting? Who learns human resources? Who learns product and inventory management? Who learns scaling an operation, who learns systems building? Nobody learns those things because they're the boring parts of the business. Mm-hmm. And if you don't learn them, you're going to crash. The last thing you want to be is a person that pumps cash but has no ability to retain it.
Yeah.
You don't want to be that guy. If you don't understand how to file taxes, if you don't understand how to budget your business, I was talking with a guy in Singapore. He's the son the former president of Singapore, probably worth a couple billion dollars. He's in real estate development. He's done over 2,500 real estate development projects in Singapore. Super big guy.
And the property prices there are
crazy. So he's like proper balling. So I was having a conversation with him and he's like, you know what the biggest issue is between the elite and people that make no money? I'm like, what? Financial literacy. Mm. He said, most people are financially illiterate and it's a language. And I'm like, what do you mean it's a language? He's like, yes, finance is the language of the elite. Just like Latin used to be the language prior to the peasants being able to have access to read the Bible, they would have to go to the elite, the popes, the deacon of the church or whoever was in charge in order to get what? In order to get the wisdom because they couldn't read. Nowadays, most people are financially illiterate. And it's in that financial lack of literacy that people get fucked.
Yeah.
Why do you need a lawyer? Because you don't know the law.
Yeah.
Why do you need a tax attorney? Because you don't know tax. Yeah, you don't need to know all of it. But if you don't know the basics, anybody can finesse you. And I think that's the biggest issue up and coming entrepreneurs and even developed entrepreneurs make and end up getting screwed on is they have not developed financial literacy because it's not sexy.
Yeah. And it's not taught in school either.
Literally, bro. Like, for example, in school, what do they teach you about law? What do they teach you about accounting? What do they teach you about business in general or managing your financials or budgeting? Nothing, bro. Why? Nobody asks why. It's on purpose.
I went to university. I did economics and business management. And I was still like, what the fuck is this? Like, the whole reason I did that degree is I thought I will surely learn how to run a business when I do this degree.
No chance.
No.
I agree, bro.
So essentially, it's really up to you to go out there and learn yourself.
I tweeted the other day, I said, self-education will never betray you. Mm. Self-education will never betray you. You have to sit down. You don't like to read books? Nobody gives a fuck. The marketplace doesn't care, dude.
Yeah.
You're not going to learn everything on YouTube. Like, that's what people don't seem to understand. You're not going to learn everything on YouTube. Sometimes you have to crack open the book. Sometimes you have to study.
Yeah.
But people think that studying is what you used to do in school. No, go study a topic that interests you. You can't be out here scrolling on TikTok 24/7 with dopamine hits, thinking that you're going to get financial literacy off of a TikTok short. Yeah, maybe it may give you some insight and information, but what are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. It's the foundation, or it may be a data set or a clue to continue learning. But what you're relying off of a piece of TikTok information, even with our own content, to build your life upon it? No, you have to become self-educated. Because most of the education that we have is education of the system. Mm-hmm. It's not self-education, it's indoctrination. And we despise that. Most people at the age of 6, they're not good at math. And they get told, oh, you're not good at math at the age of fucking 6. Yeah. So they grow up their entire life saying, I'm not good at math. I'm not good at reading. So their entire life, they don't develop foundational skills to live their life. You need a foundation. Unless you have a foundation, you cannot build anything sustainable on top of it.
Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it. That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode. Yeah. It's crazy. If you had to go back to zero, but you still have all your skills and the experience which you've acquired, what's the first thing you would do?
The first thing I would do is plan, execute, and iterate. So develop a plan. What do I want to do? What are the skill sets that I have? Because if I have nothing, doesn't mean you don't have anything. It means you have yourself, mm-hmm. right? So what are the assets that I have? I may not have assets in like hard assets like cash or connections, but what assets do I have? What am I good at, right? And you need to start at that basis point. That's the first thing I would do. The second thing is connections and relationships. Figure out the people that are going to help you execute. So how do you get into the room with the people that are going to facilitate your execution, right? So let's say I start from zero. First thing I would do, plan a way to make money online. And that doesn't mean that, you know, there's a lot of people that have brick and mortar businesses and they're like, oh, not everybody can make money online. Okay, perfect. Then you won't make money online. But my first thing would be plan. Plan what? Plan my ability to make $5,000 or $10,000 a month. How am I going to do that? Most likely online. Why? Low friction, low cost, high traffic volume of people. Very simple. Mm-hmm. What would my execution be? Whatever the execution of the plan would be. How would I create a plan? First, very simple. What can I be the best at? I'm giving the equation for how to make money. What can I be the best at? You need to figure out what you can actually be the best at based off of your skills. If you're not the best, develop the skill sets to become the best. The second thing is I need to be in high demand, right? You can't be doing something that's not in high demand. You're in a great space. You're in an evergreen space. You're in the fitness space. You're in the health space. That shit's only growing. It's only getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, I need to be able to do something that I'm irreplaceable in. So I need to be the best at what I do. I need to be in high demand and I need to be irreplaceable. You look at all these guys that got fired from Amazon, Facebook, Google, why? Replaceable. Mm. So if you want to make money, right? Make a plan to make money, figure out how you can be the best at what you do, how you can be irreplaceable and figure out how you can be in high demand. Then execute on that plan. What does that mean? You need to develop a business plan. You don't know how to develop a business plan. Look it up. Very simple. And execute on it. That means you said, I haven't missed a week in 14 years training. Same thing it should be with business, right? I'm not going to miss a single deadline of everything that I've told myself I was going to do. And finally, iterate. Go back, look at the business plan, figure out what can I do better and implement that change. And that's the cycle, brother.
Man, you know your shit. I'm impressed. Would you say, it seems as though you've got the business aspect and the making money on lock. What about your health and your wellness? How's that going?
So I actually lost, you'd be surprised, I lost like 40 pounds. I was actually like super overweight. I was eating Chick-fil-A every single day with that bullshit peanut oil. And I was super unhealthy. And then...
Was it because you were just so focused on making money?
So
you were like,
focused on, so whatever. Focused. And then I had my first mushroom trip. Oh. And my mushroom trip was like, dude, what if the food's poisoning me? Like, what if it... I looked at a photo of myself and I had massive bags under my eyes. And I'm like, dude, like, what the fuck am I doing? I had like a chin, like a double chin. And I'm like, whoa, is this the best version of myself? And then I kind of ignored it. And then I went to a nice steakhouse and I know it sounds crazy now, but I couldn't button up my jeans. And at that moment, I was like, something has to change. Like, I can't continue like this lifestyle. It's absolutely ridiculous. So for better or for worse, I did a year of vegan diet. So I went on literally juicing and fasting. And I think it was a what is it, like the raw diet, wasn't sustainable because I lost a lot of weight and I wasn't super strong.
Probably a lot of muscle as well.
Yes, but it helped me cleanse, right? Yeah. So I think everybody should kind of implement dietary restrictions. I think dietary restrictions are one of the best things that people can actually do for their health. Why? Because it's a conscientious understanding of how you eat. And I think if people can't control what they put in their mouth, what can you actually control in your life? If you can't control what you eat, what can you actually control, brother? Nothing. So that's the first building block. The second one is mobility. So food, essential. I master that, bro. You'll never see me eating junk food a day in my life. Even drinking a little bit of this water, I'm like, I feel guilty because I'm like, okay, it's plastic bottle, potentially has a little bit of fluoride in it. I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit bad, but I was a little bit thirsty, guilty. The second one is mobility. I stretch every single day. So yeah, I may not be the biggest guy, but at the, I feel super good. Yeah. I feel super healthy. And yeah, of course, building block, your skeletal muscle is the building block for longevity. We know this, but you're going to help me with that. So,
well, you can help me.
I got the thirst stat, bro. Trust, bro. I got you.
You can help me with the mobility because that's bad.
Bro, with Nate, bro. Nate will help you with the whole flexibility.
Isn't it weird because there's so many things that you know you should be doing, but sometimes it just takes something for you to just fucking do it. I think, with you, maybe just that trip and you just look at yourself and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Like, I think it's the self, we talked about the self-realization of self-sabotage. Mm. We fuck ourselves up, bro. Like people talk about the system. People talk about the people that are against them. People talk about, you know, oh, they're printing money out of thin air. Oh, money's not worth anything. Or they say, I have no opportunity. But how many actions in our life are self-sabotaging? All day long, we self-sabotage. Mm. So why can't we turn off those self-sabotaging habits and replace them for positive habits? What I've realized that people do is they want to cut something out. Okay, I'm going to cut out smoking. I'm going to cut out drinking. But you're not supposed to cut out something. You're supposed to replace it. Yeah. Because there's a quote that says, an idle mind is the devil's workshop. So if you're not thinking about anything, if you're not doing anything, if you're not being productive, then you're most likely going to go back to what? Your tendencies and your old habits that you formed over a long period of time. So if you want to change those habits, if you want to change those tendencies, then you need to be in a situation whereby you're replacing them with a positive feedback loop. Mm. And I feel a little bit hypocritical talking about health and shit in front of you, but...
No, but like, I would say, I think the most important thing is discipline.
Yes.
Because that is going to determine what you do on the days that you're not motivated. Mm. And I have those days as well. There's plenty of times when I wake up and I'm like, don't want to go to the gym, especially if it's like, if I know it's going to be a horrible session, like a leg session, I don't want to do that. But it's the, I always have this thing where I visualize how I'm going to feel after I do it. I have that with training, but I also have it with food as well. So even though there could just be this delicious, you know, burger, Cinnabon, whatever in front of me, I know it's going to provide me with temporary happiness for maybe 20 minutes. And then afterwards, it's kind of like shame and regret. And then, you know, you have to deal with all the negative side effects that come with eating something like that. And then usually what I always find is eating something like that, you just, it becomes way easier to continue to eat like that.
Yes.
Because you change the microbiome.
It's the slippery slope. Yeah. It's like, okay, you permit it one time, but it's okay. I'll permit it a second time. And to add to that, it may not even be temporary happiness. It may just be temporary dopamine. Mm. Like you're craving the dopamine of that past experience of how that made you feel. And if you look at the vibrational frequencies of how people operate on the higher spectrum of vibrational frequency, like you have enlightenment, but underneath that you have love, joy, gratitude. And at the bottom, you have shame.
Yeah.
So you operating at your lowest form of vibrational frequency, you are operating in a state of what? Shame. So when you do something that you know you're not supposed to do, you go into your lowest form of vibration, aka the lowest form of yourself. And most people live in a state of what? What I like to call quiet desperation. They live in a state of quiet shame. So they're ashamed of their habits. They're ashamed of what they do, but they don't change. AKA, they're always living in a low state of vibration. And you see them walking around. They walk unhappy. They operate unhappy. When they interact with people, they are unhappy. Why? Because they're not the best versions of themselves.
Yeah. I was in that state. I think it was in 2018. I was in a long distance relationship where I barely got to see my girlfriend. I literally had no social life. I was bored. And I was thinking to myself, there must be more to life than this. And because I was bored, because I wasn't doing anything that was providing me with joy or happiness, I would just resort to food. And that was my temporary happiness that was also keeping me at this very low level of vibration. And I noticed that when I decided to sort my life out and be like, right, there has to be more to life than this. I'm going to go out. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I traveled a lot. I moved out of London. And I realized I naturally would just became a hell of a lot happier. And when I'm in a happier state, I have like no interest in eating bad food.
Yes. And for many people, eating is a form of coping.
Mm.
It's a coping mechanism. Have you fasted? Have you done like some pretty long fasts?
I've never done, I don't think I've ever done a 24-hour fast.
No?
The longest one I did a few times when I've done it during Ramadan.
Yeah.
And I think the very longest one was when I did it in the UK, because I had a client when I was back when I was a personal trainer. He was doing it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it as well, because I'm curious to know what it's actually like and how I would train if I'm going to be fasting all day and not drinking any water. So I think that it was in the middle of summer. So the sunset was at 9:30.
Yeah.
So that was a full day.
Yeah, pretty long.
No food, no water. Not eating the food was doable. I think since I started intermittent fasting, to begin with, it's like really weird. And you're just thinking, I need to eat. I'm not going to survive. But you will. Of course you will. You have so much stored energy. It's just like impossible for you to not survive.
Yes.
But not drinking the water was, that was more of a challenge.
But have you done like water fasts that are just like, or no?
No.
Okay. So people that do water fasts, and I experienced this, 2 days into your water fast, you start roaming the kitchen. You start roaming the kitchen. Imagine how much mental real estate is occupied by eating.
Yeah. Like,
oh, okay. I have to eat breakfast, eat lunch, eat dinner. Dude, that's a fucking huge psyop. I've talked about it before. People think that breakfast is this normal thing that is just everybody has always done, but it's not. Edward Bernays, who's known as the father of propaganda, he's, I think, the uncle to the founder of Netflix, another propaganda machine.
Mm.
He created a campaign based off of breakfast. The meat industry came to him and said, hey, we're missing sales on sausages and bacon. We need to boost the sales of sausages and bacon. So he created this entire campaign and went to all the medical professionals and said, hey, let's start pushing breakfast being the healthiest, most essential meal of the day. And guess what happened to the sale of bacon and sausages? Skyrocketed.
Mm.
He did the exact same thing with what? Cigarettes. He was the guy behind cigarettes empowering women. So he built an entire campaign. We're talking about these myths of health, right? And he said, okay, the cigarette companies came to Edward Bernays and they're like, you know what? We need to boost our sales. I think it was Lucky. Lucky was the company back in the day. You've probably seen those old commercials Lucky. And the entire premise of the campaign was cigarettes to women are torches of freedom. So the entire campaign was, if you are a woman and you want the empowerment of being a woman and the freedom that comes with being a woman, smoke a cigarette. So what now? Health is correlated with breakfast. Women's empowerment is correlated with cigarettes. So how can you differentiate those? So you need to evaluate, in my opinion, the source of the information that's telling you what you do, instead of just adopting that philosophy and those belief systems and always asking, what is the source of the information? Why are they saying this? And is it true?
Yeah. Nobody does any critical thinking anymore.
Nobody, brother.
People are just, whatever they see, they believe. And I don't know, when I kind of came to the realization that this was not the way to think, I think before COVID, but particularly around COVID, I started questioning everything. I was like, why am I being shown this on the news sites? It's like, why are they choosing to talk about this and not the other things? Like, why were they not talking about just going outside, being more active, getting all your vitamins and being healthy? Why were they just saying, oh, hide, cover up, and avoid people?
I mean, the answer is very simple. You just have to look at who owns the companies.
Yeah.
Right? So if you look at who owns CNBC, who owns Fox, who owns CNN, at the top of the shareholder list, you have Vanguard and BlackRock. Then you look at the manufacturers of the jabs. Okay, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, who are the top shareholders of those companies, Vanguard and BlackRock. Now you look at the flight companies that banned all flights. No flights unless you're taken care of. Who are the top shareholders? Vanguard, BlackRock. You look at the food. Okay, who are the top shareholders of all this junk food? Vanguard and BlackRock. So it's this ecosystem of how to print butterflies out of thin air. So the media is controlled, the food is controlled, the narrative is controlled, the transportation is controlled. Who owns Meta? Who owns Snapchat? Who owns, well, used to be, but still kind of does, Twitter? Who owns Google? They're pushing the same narrative. The media is pushing, oh, it's the same company. It's BlackRock. It's Vanguard. Profit-driven companies. So this idea of breakfast, right? Edward Bernays, cigarettes, Edward Bernays, is the exact same play, but at a macro global scale at this point. Why? Because they have access to the internet and the distribution of information is a lot more simple and effective at a mass viral scale as opposed to newspaper and billboards like it used to be back in the day.
What do you think about AI?
AI is going to replace a lot of people, brother. And in 2019, I had the privilege to sit down, I can't disclose the names, but with some people that were working on some top tier AI companies. And recently I had the privilege of talking to some people that are executives or high up people at OpenAI. In 2019, when I set out to build Capital Club, my entire premise was, based off my conversations with these people, was I need to build an AI proof company. And as I sat down with these people, I said, there's two things that AI will never be able to replace: personal development and community. So AI will never be able to eat healthy on your behalf. It'll never be able to go to the gym on your behalf. And community, they'll never be able to have this right on your behalf. Yeah, that may be 30, 40, 50 years down the road. It doesn't really matter. It may not replace construction workers at this time. That may be 100 years down the road. But all these white collar skills, dude, I had one of my lawyers, my retainer's $500 an hour. That's what I have to pay. I'm assuming my lawyer knows the shit that they're talking about. I cross-referenced that with ChatGPT, some Puerto Rican tax law, whatever. My lawyer was wrong. I fired that motherfucker instantly.
Really?
Yes, brother. Yes. So now I'm like, okay, what about 10 years down the road? This thing that's going to understand and read all the tax law, that's going to understand all the criminal like playground. Am I going to need a lawyer? Potentially not. Am I going to need an accountant when AI can literally run my books? Most likely not. And you're seeing now with the editing softwares, right? AI is literally chopping up and editing shit instantly. Am I going to need a video editor? Oh yeah, but you're going to need a video editor for movies. Yeah, but that's short-term thinking. What about 10 years down the road? So I'm building companies of tomorrow because technology is advancing so quickly. There's a concept known as Moore's Law. I think Moore is the guy that created, I think, Dell. Dell. Don't quote me, but I think it's Dell. And he created this concept of Moore's Law that technology advances super quickly and it becomes cost efficient. So the processing power doubles and the cost happens every like 2 years or something like that. So stuff is ramping up and people are still going to university. People are still doing traditional jobs, maybe fine, but 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the road, how are you going to be positioned? So in 2019, I was like, I need to build an AI proof company, build Capital Club, focus on developing this concept of entrepreneurs, building and scaling digital businesses and community, like this interaction, irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And it's playing out just according to plan.
I've seen some people say it's going to become so smart that we will literally not even be able to understand it.
Brother, just wait till somebody creates an AI that puts Jesus, Muhammad, the Buddha, all into one and people start worshiping the church of AI. Just wait for it, bro. Watch it. Clip this. Wait for it, bro. Motherfuckers in Japan already have virtual girlfriends in the metaverse. Yeah. What do you think? People are not going to
be a big thing.
Come on,
virtual
brother.
Girlfriends, where they can actually figure out like the how to make a physical,
a virtual girl that's powered by AI that knows your personality, that caters to you, that has a sort of personality.
Doesn't give you any shit,
brother. Come on, like it may not be today, but remember, 50, 100 years ago, people were talking about cell phones. Very few people were talking about cell phones. 20, 30 years ago, people were talking about the internet. changing the world, and everybody called them freaks. Mm. Everybody called them idiots. And that's what we use it today. We're basically cyborgs, bro. We don't go anywhere without our phones. Mm. Nowhere. Now wait till AI is integrated into every aspect of humanity. Game over, brother.
Do you ever worry that this potentially worrying future that we're about to enter is not a place where you would want to raise kids or have kids of your own?
I'll just, like I told you, bro, get a property, a little ranch. We can go 50-50 on a ranch in Patagonia, bro. You cut the logs.
Give me a nice sharp axe. I'll get to work.
Yeah, bro. So my plan is very simple. Be liquid, be able to move. But yeah, no plans for kids, bro, honestly.
Yeah.
There's plenty of kids out there. Maybe raise some orphans. And that's kind of one of the things I want to do.
Okay.
Plenty of children to take care of.
I was going to ask you as well, because you said you managed to get yourself into some of these situations where you're having some pretty amazing conversations with pretty important people. How do you nestle your way into these places and create these opportunities for yourself?
I think you use the right word, create opportunity. I think before you create an opportunity, you need to identify the opportunity. So most people, for example, you probably get a fuck ton of DMs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Every single day. Oh, let me come edit for you. Let me come do this for you. Or let's train together. Or hey, I'm in Dubai. Or hey, I'm in whatever. You get hundreds of DMs. Same thing with me. But nobody ever comes to me and says, hey, Luke, I identified this need, this vulnerability in your business. I know how to increase your returns by X amount of money. I know how to make money for you. I know how to do this for you. I'll do it for free. Here it is. What, I wouldn't respond to that DM? Mm. We read our DMs. People don't seem to understand, bro. So what I did is I study people the same way that I study markets. People have needs. People have vulnerabilities. People have necessities. Even the richest, most successful person in the world, they have something that they're lacking. It may not be money, but they may be lacking in health. They may be lacking in connections. They may be lacking in a specific resource. Your goal is to position yourself in that situation to supply that need and come in as what? The irreplaceable, most experienced, in-demand person, so not just to make money, but to capture the opportunity. Okay. I mean, I'll give you an example because people always ask me how I met Andrew Tate, right? So I met him when he had 83,000 followers on IG. What had happened? He'd gotten banned, right? So I came in with my team. Hey, I got you. I got you taken cover.
What year was this? This was before the big ban.
Yeah, of course. So he'd gotten banned. Yeah. Like, you know, he gets banned multiple times. It was a rough one. But I hit him up. Hey, I can get your account back within 24 hours. And I paid for it, right? It cost me, I think, like $10,000. I paid for it.
He will... I can respect that.
Yeah. And it's just like, and I did it because I was like, okay, I fuck with this guy. I like what he's talking about. Mm. I didn't think he was going to be doing 3-5 billion views a week on social platforms. I didn't. But I wanted to be in connection with people that I respected, that people that I had synergy with. So I took care of him. Then that led to business opportunities with him, right? And then he got banned again. Who was there? Who was the first person that got the call? Me. Right. So having direct access to individuals is directly correlated to your ability to supply their what? Their needs.
Solving rich people problems.
Yeah. Solving, brother. You know, sometimes I have friends that are doctors, right? In Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico's full of billionaires, crypto billionaires, hedge fund billionaires, VC billionaires. And these guys do like in-house calls, right? Houses that I could never get into. These are buddies of mine. So they get a call. Let's say it's like a top guy, top VC guy, top hedge fund manager worth a couple billion dollars. Hey, I need you to come do like a checkup on me in-house. These guys are not going to go to a clinic. Guess who's walking right behind the doctor? Me, brother. They don't want to fucking talk to me. They don't care if I'm wearing a $50,000 Rolex, $100,000 Rolex. They just want to figure out if their health and their blood work is in check. But guess who got access to the room? The person that supplied the need, which is the doctor in that situation. So you don't have to have money. People are always like, oh, I don't have money. I don't have anything to provide to you. You know, I'm a small guy. Then don't fucking talk to me. If you have nothing to provide, why am I going to waste time with you?
Yeah.
You need to come in as the most experienced, irreplaceable, and high demand individual so that you can get access to the room. And if you position yourself correctly, you can get access to literally any room. And if you say, no, you can't, perfect, you can't. But I am a walking testament that it's possible. Now, if people perceive you as immature, unprofessional, unprepared, then that's a response that you're going to get. So once again, become the best at what you do, become irreplaceable, and be in high demand by developing your skill sets, position yourself properly, and with enough iteration, eventually somebody will say yes. Most people send one DM and expect that person to respond. No, sometimes you need to follow up consistently, and you need to be what? Like you said, consistent, discipline of outreach. Okay, perfect. You want to get in the music industry? How many producers, how many musicians have you messaged? How many people have you tried to help? You want to get in the fitness industry? How many fitness influencers you want to lift with? How many people have you said, hey, like me, let me take care of, I got this kit of whatever, whatever the need may be. I'm an entrepreneur. I can help you grow your revenue by this amount. That's how I got started my entrepreneurial journey. I helped a company in Wall Street with Facebook ads, right? And I did it for free for 2 months. Free service, doubled the revenue with Facebook ads. After the 2 months, I called them like, hey, I want a contract. Like, I want a contract. They're like, okay, we'll talk about it next month. The next day, I turned off their ads. The next day, they called me, fly up to New York.
Yeah.
They gave me, I think, a $6,000, $7,000 a month retainer, right? So that's the entire premise, is you need to be able to provide value ahead of time and you can get into the rooms.
Mm-hmm. What would be your advice when it comes to building a community? Because I think you, from the looks of things, you're pretty good at that. And you have, what's this, the club you've created?
Capital Club.
Is that like live now or
It's live.
Yeah.
It's live. So it's divided into two categories. The first one is for high-end entrepreneurs. So people in the 7 to 9 figure range. We have about 300 members and it costs $15,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
So it's a high ticket product, but all these people come back every single year. So it's the ability to network, connect with people, gives you access to deal flows and investments that nobody really can get access to in the marketplace. Then we have our subscription, which is $1 a day for people to be able to network and connect with experts at a community level. So that's available. But the big thing that I've learned from community is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
I tell my people what I mean, and I mean what I tell them. People trust me because they know I'm not going to lie to them. And that's the foundation of everything. It's the relationship that you have with a girl. It's the relationship that you have with your parents, with your friends, with your business partner, and also with your community. If they can't trust you, they're not going to fuck with you. And the best way to trust somebody is if you know that what they're telling you is the truth.
Mm.
And the best way to be truthful is to be authentic.
Yeah.
The truest version of yourself. So that's why people fuck with me, is because what I say, I actually mean it.
I think that's one of the biggest things that a lot of guys struggle with. They might hide away, which is fair enough, but they just focus on acquiring skills, building a business, making money. And if they do it properly and they focus over time, they achieve that goal. But the problem is they don't have any friends. They don't have any other men in a similar situation who they can speak to and socialize with. So I think there is this trend of these private members club, these communities, even like the War Room, where it's an opportunity for people to almost, they buy in, but then they just will have access to all these other amazing people who have made a load of money. And everybody's just, because when you get into a position where you have a load of money, you're not afraid to keep the secrets yourself.
Yeah.
That you just want to help everyone else out because they all understand that everybody can make money. It's not scarce resource.
Well, exactly. There's plenty for everybody to go around. And like you said, it's the scarcity of mindset of bottlenecking your information. Dude, I tell my people everything.
Mm.
Everything. I have nothing to hold back. Nothing. But like you said, I agree 100% with you, brother. You said men, especially people that are, you know, dude, men are fucking lonely, bro. People don't seem to understand that. 77% of suicides, men. Every 5 minutes, a man commits suicide. Dude, like, who's going to fucking step up and be like, yo, I got you guys.
Mm.
Like, hey, you know, there's a couple guys, but obviously they're getting censored. Community is extremely important. And people bash and shit on communities, but communities that are oriented towards the development of self and authenticity will stand the test of time. I think there's three types of relationships that every man should have. One is they should have a mentor, somebody that they look up to, that they can learn from, that they can be tutored by. That, bro, look at every king in history. They all had tutors. They all had mentors.
Mm.
Look at Homer. Look at Socrates. Look at Aristotle. All of them had mentors. Every single last one of them. Look at Plato. all of them had what? Mentors. You need somebody to learn from that is a senior, that is more developed in the areas that you want to grow in. And you'll have different mentors for different things. The next one is you need what? An equal. You need community. You need somebody that is at your level that what? Resonates with you, a brotherhood. So you need a mentor, you need a brotherhood. And finally, you need a mentee. Every person, even if you're a scrub, you need a mentee. Maybe it's your little brother. Who are you mentoring? Why? Because that person keeps you accountable to continue developing. Why? Because they're there. So you need to take care of somebody. You need to be equals with people. You need to have a mentor. Every man needs one of at least one person in each one of those three relationships in order to what? Avoid this feeling of isolation and loneliness. But it requires what? Two things. Proactiveness, actually going out and seeking these people. They're not just going to show up. And two, intentionality. What are you doing with that relationship? Are you giving? Are you asking? Every relationship is a give and take. You need to be able to provide value and receive value. And in that, you build what? Reciprocity. It's the reciprocity principle. It's the back and forth. It's the ping pong. It's the business, right?
Even with the, I've only done two masterminds, but I mean, particularly the last one I did in Marbella. I mean, obviously I was doing my thing.
How was that?
It was really good. I was providing value from my end, but because there's obviously there's a buy-in, the amount of stuff that I learned that weekend was crazy. Because everybody had come from different backgrounds, but ultimately the one thing we all had in common was we were all making money. But a skill set which I had, which they, like I say, one of my biggest skill sets when I compare myself to all of them is I've mastered the art of social media, but I've built a following. That's one thing that they struggle with. But some of those guys were really switched on when it comes to like business or email marketing or all these little things. And we were just talking and discussing and they were like, oh, you should do this or you should try this. And I was just like, what? Like that's, I'd never even thought about that. And I've walked away from that weekend where everybody's better off. And not only that, like I'm sure we made some long-term friends. And overall, it was a great experience.
You got mentored by your mentees.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like that's the exact, and then you had some equals. And then you have people in the fitness space that you look up to and those people mentor you. And now that's why you have that compatibility. And even though you're a lone wolf, you have those three relationships balanced. Every man needs that. But most men are isolated in their room with their little fucking LED lights and on their computer playing video games. And they assume that people are going to come to them and reach out to them. If you want to become a high value man, it's not just to get a high value woman. It's to find other high value men that will what? Be in synergy with you. Yeah. Because a mastermind, this concept of a mastermind is when many minds come together to form a mastermind. So a mastermind isn't an event. A mastermind is when many brilliant people come together to form literally a super brain.
Have you done them before?
Yes. Yeah.
How have they been for you? How have they been for you?
Incredible.
Yeah.
I think people should go to masterminds. I think people should become extremely skilled and build their own masterminds, whether it's at a mentee level or at a peer level. I think you can do a free mastermind. If you're in business, an aspiring entrepreneur, if you know aspiring entrepreneurs in your area, it doesn't have to be the same business. Maybe you're in digital marketing. Maybe the other guy runs a lawn mowing business. Maybe the other guy runs a roofing company. Maybe the other guy runs a tourism company. But what can you learn from each other? And in that relationship, you build what? A mentorship group. You build an accountability group. It doesn't have to be paid, but usually the paid ones come with structure, more experience, things that you can count on. But every man should be involved in groups of accountability, in groups of mentorship, 100%. It's undeniable. Most of the successful people, brother, I'll give you an example. I live in Puerto Rico. The Ritz-Carlton, the membership, 100 grand to get in. Right. If you want to be part of the club at the Ritz-Carlton, it's $100,000. That's the buy-in. Okay. Why did I pay for my Ritz-Carlton membership? Because of the members that are there.
Yeah.
It's my buy-in. There's places where you have to pay to play. There's rooms that we will never be able to get into because it'll cost you fucking $50 million. What do you think? People that go and pay those, you know, people go to charities and they'll go and drop $25 million on a charity. Do you think some of these guys are doing it out of goodwill? No, because they realize that who they're giving the charity to, whatever that organization, that foundation is, will give them access to that club, that group of people. And then my maintenance fee every single month is $1,000. Why do I do that? Because I know that when I go to the pool area, it's full of rich people. Why? Because I know how much it costs them to pay there. So I know it's no bullshit, but it's a pay-to-play game, just like in a video game. Do you want to get into the high places? You either need to be super experienced, super skilled, super prestigious, or you got to pay.
Mm. Who's your mentors, or who are the mentors you've had in the past that have had the biggest effect on you? Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. Once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, and you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode.
I have two. One that is no longer alive, and then one that is still alive. One that is no longer alive, Leonardo da Vinci.
Mm-hmm.
I studied da Vinci a lot because at his time, he was considered a crazy man. Now we revere him as a genius, but he was a polymath. That means he was a man of many skills. So he was a mathematician. He was an engineer. He was an artist. He was a sculptor. He was a businessman. He was actually a freelancer. People see all the paintings and the things that he was doing. He didn't do that for free. He was getting paid to do those things. But at the time, he was considered a freak by many people. You look at, for example, the painting of the Last Supper, right? It was actually painted in a church or in a building. It was a commissioned piece of work. It wasn't painted, you know, for his goodwill. And that ended up turning into a stable, like where they would put horses. So this piece of art that we revere as a massive part of humanity in the arts, and it was once, you know, the graffiti of a stable. And it's absolutely crazy to think about. But at the time, he was misunderstood. So I studied Da Vinci. Da Vinci has this incredible quote. He says, it's a famous quote. He says, "To develop a complete mind, study the..." When I think of Da Vinci, it's just fucking crazy. But anyways, Da Vinci famously said, "To develop a complete mind, study the science of art. Study the art of science. Learn how to see. Realize that everything connects to everything else." What does this mean? This means that he understood that he could study art in a scientific way, and he could study science in an artistic way. And that what he was told reality wasn't the way that it was. Maybe we perceive reality by the constructs that we've been given and not for what reality actually is. If you want to develop a complete mind, you need to develop multiple aspects of your life. That's why the same thing with your mastermind. You went and you developed a more complete mind because you learned from people, from aspects that you'd never even recognize were reality. Learn how to see, realize that everything connects to everything else. So how you do fitness is how you do business. How you take care of your girl is how you're going to take care of your customers. How you're honest with yourself is how you're going to be honest with others. Everything connects to everything else. So Leonardo da Vinci, massive inspiration, mentor to me. The second one is an OG digital marketer. He's no longer kind of like on the pinnacle, but his name's Jay Abraham. He was doing $1 million masterminds back in the 90s. When it was like actually like balling, he was doing like $1 million days. He's a digital marketer, probably like a pioneer of business. Those would be the two guys that I would revere at the top of my list.
Was he someone who you were actively speaking to or just learning?
Yeah. So I was a big fan of his work, and then I got introduced to him and I speak to him on a weekly basis. He's like a top dog.
You pay for that?
No, free.
Okay.
Yeah. Relationships, rather.
Nice. God. So, you speak about reality. What do you think this reality is that we're in right now?
I think it's a matrix, bro, for sure. I think it's a, I genuinely believe. So here's my premise. God creates the universe, right? But the universe has a creator, and the creation is obviously a construct. So how we perceive reality isn't really how reality is. Mm. So let me kind of break this down in a simple format. The way I perceive you is only the way that my brain allows me to perceive you through my receptors, my eyes. But that doesn't mean that that's what you actually are. You're just a composition of what? Atoms and cells that are kind of meshed together and held together. But maybe that's not just all of reality. Maybe I close my eyes, right? And I'm speaking to the soul version of you, and the construct version of you couldn't actually be there. So this aspect of physical reality isn't actually real. It's just how we interact with it in the three-dimensional realm. It's a concept that I like to kind of play with, mm-hmm. but I like the idea of there being a creator and a higher power that we are accountable to for our actions and for our way of living.
And to keep that creator happy, what do you think you should do? Just be a good person.
Be obedient.
To them.
To the truth.
Explain.
I think people know what to do and they don't do it.
Mm.
I think many people lie to themselves. They know what truth is and they avoid it. They know what good is and they avoid it. We live in a world where there's people that do not want to be held accountable to this idea of there being an absolute truth, right? Everything is good, everything is bad. But, you know, there's things that we can all unanimously agree to that are bad. You know, if you go out and rape a woman, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unanimously. Yeah, some cultures may accept it. Doesn't mean it's good. So what is it? What is that moral trigger inside of us that tells us that that action is bad?
Are you religious?
No. Religion to me is a construct of how other people have been in relationship with God. I am So a couple of years ago, I had a conversation with God. I believe it to be a genuine conversation. And I was reading, have you read the Bible by chance? I recommend you read it.
Everybody's saying I should do that.
Okay, then so maybe that's God telling you to read it. So there's this, have you heard of King David? You've heard of the Star of mm-hmm. David. So King David has a son. His name is Solomon. There's a story in the Bible where Solomon is dreaming. He goes into dream state and God comes to him in dream state. And God says to Solomon, anything that you want, I will give you. If you want wealth, I'll give you wealth. I'll make you the richest man. If you want kingdoms, I'll give you the kingdoms. Tell me whatever it is that you want and I'll give it to you. And Solomon didn't ask for riches, didn't ask for kingdoms. He asked for one thing. He said, give me wisdom. And God gave him wisdom. And after that, the riches came, the kingdoms came, and every other thing that comes with it. So as I read that, I sat there and I was like, God, give me wisdom. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what this means, but give me wisdom and allow me to be a person that makes decisions, not out of spontaneity, not out of reactiveness or out of emotion, but out of a state of mind in which I can be wise. And from that, everything else will come. So my relationship with God is now a pursuit of truth and a pursuit of wisdom. And I think it's working.
Seems like it is. Do you have anything about yourself that you're not happy with or you feel like is holding you back or getting in the way? Because I don't feel like you're the type of guy that has many bad habits. But I feel like everybody has some.
Yes. I have skeletons in my closet, brother.
Mm.
But I don't think I have addictions. I think sometimes I'm disobedient.
What, to yourself or
to the truth?
Okay.
to knowing what you need to do and not doing it. But I don't like to be this person that's attached to things. You know, at a point I was smoking weed. I've been sober from it. Why? Because I realized that that thing was controlling my life. And it's not that, oh, it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's realizing that if it controls me, then, and I'm not controlling it, then I'm being disobedient. Why? Because I don't need anything controlling me. I don't need anything dictating how I operate, waking up and smoking a joint or waking up and drinking alcohol or whatever it may be. It could even be a good thing that you overdo. But this entire concept of kind of being in a situation whereby I have addictions, I would say I've steered clear from a lot of those, but I do have times where I'm disobedient to what I know I'm supposed to do. And I choose to not be obedient to those things that I've committed to myself.
It's weird. Sometimes you get a bit of a kick, just like being disobedient to yourself sometimes.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. I mean, sometimes you got to let loose, but at the same time, it's like, I would say another thing, consistency. You know, this principle of, there's different people that operate in different ways. I consider myself a polymath of sorts. So I like to study different things at different times. So I'll study mathematics. I'll study architecture. I'll study business, developing a complete mind, right? Under this principle of Da Vinci. Of course, I'm no Da Vinci by no stretch of the imagination, but I like to study multiple things. In that creative mind, you often find spurts of genius here. Whereby, for example, you've developed that consistency compounding effect. Clearly, it's visible with your fucking arms. Whereby the consistency compounds, right? And in that consistency that compounds, you have the building process. And there's two ways of, you know, doing great things. You can have spurts of success, or you can have the compounding effect. In my life, I've had these spurts of kind of just massive wins. Because I go into a massive win and then kind of like I chill or I meditate or I vibe and I kind of just hang out, kind of like what I've been doing the last 2 years. And then I'll have like another spurt. I would like to develop a sense of continuity. I would like to experience that. I wouldn't say it's a good or a bad thing, but there's definitely things in my life that I can be more consistent in.
It seems like you're very consistent at learning.
Yes, brother. Learning is so important, brother.
How many hours a day are you?
Every day I read. Every single day I read.
How long for on average?
A book a week.
Okay.
Yeah. A book every single week.
What about podcasts and other things, or you just focus on the books?
So yes and no. So for example, the question is the host of the podcast, why are they making the podcast? Are they making it for AdSense? Are they making it for growth? Are they making it for their own personal gain? Or are they doing it for some reason to like give? I love Joe Rogan. I think he's a G, right? He brings in a ton of guests that I like to listen to. But I want to gain an advantage in the marketplace by uncovering the information and the knowledge that is not mainstream. So I'll go to Yandex, which is like a Russian version of Google that is uncensored. And I'll go and like uncover books about the central bank and the history of money and things that are kind of banned and not allowed or censored or things of this nature. And I'll kind of study those things to have an advantage. If everybody's, no offense, right? If everybody's out here reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki, what advantage do you have? Yeah. If everybody's reading How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which is a great book, but what advantage do you have?
Yeah.
So you need to be able to acquire information and knowledge that will be able to set you apart. And that means that you have to explore for that information, like a library, right? You can't just go to the most, like the trending section. If you want to go to specific knowledge, you have to search.
How can you decide, okay, this might be legit, or no, this is just a ridiculous conspiracy theory? Because I've kind of gone down that rabbit hole a bit where I would watch a few videos on conspiracy theories and I'm just thinking, like as some of these people just making up these theories just to tell a good story and get views.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's two-sided. Like there's conspiracy theories that I won't even entertain. Why? Well, for the simple fact that they don't benefit my life in any way, shape or form. Right. So people are talking about, oh, the earth is this shape or that shape. Okay, perfect. It doesn't matter if I live on an earth that's the shape of a fucking Dorito chip. Is it going to make any difference to my finances? Mm-hmm. Is it going to make any difference to my relationships? No. Okay. So I don't care about that, right? I don't care about how the Titanic sank or this bullshit submarine nonsense that was going on Twitter. Like, I don't care why, because it has no foundational difference to my life. How money works has a big impact on my life. how the educational system was conjured up, which is based on the Prussian school system to create workers and basically slave-minded bots. That's a conspiracy that ended up actually being true. So I want to study the things that will actually have a direct impact to the well-being of my life without rabbit trailing too far into, you know, tinfoil hats and the frogs being gay, which, by the way, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Which, by the way, ended up being true. Cause there's actually like chemicals in the water that are effeminizing frogs, which are probably also effeminizing women, but that's or men, but that's a conversation for
that's
a conversation for dinner.
I imagine you're a pretty well-traveled guy. You've been to a lot of places.
55 countries.
55. All right. I like to travel as well. I don't think
I've been. What's your favorite country, bro?
I think I've not been there yet. I think I would really like Japan. That's on the list.
Bro, you would fucking go. You'd make some badass content.
Yeah, I know. Like every day would be a different video.
Yes.
I would imagine the places I like the most are the not the mainstream places. Not the, okay, all the tourists go here, because it's all been documented and you already know so much about it. I like going places where I think this is different.
What's your favorite country in Europe? Because you've traveled Europe pretty heavy, huh?
There's still a lot of, I've not ventured into Eastern Europe.
Mm.
I've done a lot of Spain, Portugal, France, pretty Germany. Nice, brother. Croatia was cool.
Croatia's nice, brother.
Corsica was interesting.
Have you been to Greece?
I've been to a place, Crete, Chania. Yes. That was nice as well.
You should go to Greece, bro. Super sick. Mm. That's where all the ancient wisdom was. That's where all the Greek gods. That's where you belong, my brother Hercules. this guy, you messaged me and you're like, hey bro, I'm back in town. I'm like, you're like, who's back in town? I'm like, what? Hercules is back in town. I went to the Parthenon in Greece, mm-hmm. and I walk up the staircases. There's olive trees to my right, olive trees to my left. The breeze from the ocean kind of hitting the back of my head, and that's where the Stoics used to sit, mm-hmm. and they would converse. And I would go up the stairs and the sun would beam through the big marble pillars. And I sat there, and this is where like the ancient Greeks and the philosophers would sit down and converse, and they would argue and philosophize the intricacies of life. There's an energy there that's immaculate.
Mm-hmm.
You should go.
That's on the list. There's a big list.
Yes, bro, probably.
Just quickly before we wrap up, what's your situation with women and relationships? Because I imagine, being the way you are, you would have extremely high standards of picking a potential partner. Is that something you're entertaining, or are you just like tunnel vision focused at the moment? Because I know from my own experience.
Yeah, what's your opinion? What's your take on that?
So I think during my 20s, particularly my late 20s, when I finally like was content with who I was, had the confidence, had the chat, had, you know, you got age on your side as well, like you're becoming more mature. More importantly, you got the money, you got the status. I did everything which I wanted to do, and I entertained, like, I spent a lot of time going on dates, going on holidays, like just time with women. And I've come to the realization now that that is not an efficient use of my time. And I think I'm in a position now, especially with the way things are going, the momentum that's built up, the opportunities that are coming my way, I don't think it's a good time to be in a relationship.
Mm.
And I think it would be unfair to try and be in a relationship with someone who maybe, you know, wants a boyfriend who's going to spend more time with them and go do this with them, do that with them, whatever it might be. I think I might just have to go off and do my own thing at this point in time.
I was asked earlier today by somebody I was sitting with, and said, They just recently, they had a trade job. They're an electrician. And they're like, hey, you know what? I'm thinking about getting into the dating scene. Maybe have like $10,000 to their name, $5,000. I'm like, is that on your list of priorities? Mm-hmm. Right? So it all comes down to priorities. It's not whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's what is it that you're trying to accomplish in life? Like, what is your plan?
Mm-hmm.
Is a woman, right? as beautiful as they are, as fun as it is to have them around, is that on your list of priorities as a man? Or are there things that top that list of priorities that are more important? So for me, I've only been on one date my entire life. I've only been with one woman my entire life. And I've been with her for quite some time, but...
You're still with her?
Yes. Yes. And the reason being, and I've never shared this, and the reason being is I'm a person that's content. You know, I get DMs every single day. You know what I mean? But I don't want to entertain the divisiveness of energy. You only have X amount of time and energy in the day, right? So I want to make sure that the energy that I'm inputting is returning in some way, shape, or form. People go on dates. Okay, what do you get from it? Okay, you get some pussy?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, you get some exhilarating fun? Perfect. You also ruin some people's lives in the process. But what are you gaining from that? Okay, there might be some people that have different philosophies. You can go pick up chicks. People can do whatever the fuck they want. Like, I honestly don't care. But I also know the level of distraction and the amount of effort that is required to be in that scene, to be doing those things. And to me, it's just not on my list of priorities. Not whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just on my level of priorities that is so far down the totem pole that a good thing at the wrong time can be a bad thing. It's like giving a razor to a baby and expecting the baby not to get cut. The problem isn't the razor. The problem isn't the dating. The problem isn't the woman. Maybe the problem is you. Maybe you're in a situation where you can't handle a relationship. Maybe you're in a situation where you need to focus on yourself. Maybe you're in a situation where you need to develop. You need to become a man.
I have a friend who's he's in a similar situation. He has no money, struggling to make money, but he's having the time of his life and he is in a relationship and he's also trying to pay for her as well. Yeah, everything.
It's fucking madness, bro.
And he's trapped.
Absorbed.
Yeah, he can't, he's living with her, spending far too, just way too much time with her. Any money that comes in, half of it has to go to her. And then he doesn't get any time to himself to build something that's actually going to earn him money.
I think the important thing is, number one, boundaries. People get into relationships and they assume that they have to be with somebody the entire day, all day long. Dude, I travel four, five, six months out of the year by myself. Do my own thing. I don't need to be out here on a couch watching Netflix, hugging and cuddling every single day. What the fuck is that bullshit? I'm not doing that.
You found someone who is
stable, brother. That. Because you set the parameters ahead of any sort of interaction and relationship, setting the boundaries and letting people know, hey,
this is my life. This is what I do.
And welcome on board. And if you're not on board, sorry, but that's the name of the game. And that doesn't mean I need to find 90 different girls, 10 different girls. That just means I need to understand what's my mission, what's my purpose, what's my priority. And based off of that spectrum, we talked about, obey that list of priorities that you're in. That's the first part. The second part, as a person with a lot of money, with a lot of connections, with a lot of resources, this concept of being a playboy, this concept of going and sleeping with a ton of women or being unfaithful is popularized per se. But it's not for me. I believe in loyalty. I believe in integrity. And if trust isn't there, right?
What's the point?
And if I can't be in a situation whereby I can be an honest person, then how can my community expect me to be honest with them? If I can't honor the person that I sleep in bed with, how can I honor everybody? How am I going to honor my business partner? I was once sitting with a guy. We went golfing. I didn't golf. I was just watching. I don't play golf. And he had just canceled $100 million deal that he had because he found out that the guy who was going to do the deal with had cheated on his wife. And he sat there and he looked at me. I was like, dude, you canceled $100 million deal. It's just business. He's like, it's not just business. If he cheated on the person that he sleeps with, there's a high likelihood that he'll cheat on me.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that it's going to happen or not. It's the fact that there's character flaws that can be changed that a person needs to work on. So it's a personal taste. It's not on my list of priorities. I like to hang out with the boys. I like to do my thing, but I'm a digital stoic, brother. I got my sexual energy under control.
I think that's so important.
Yes.
I was speaking to Chris about this. Being in control of your desires, or actually choosing what it is that you want to desire. Because if you desire the wrong things, then you're naturally just always going to be unhappy until you get whatever it is that you want. I think Naval said something like that. He has a quote.
And living in the primal state, everybody wants to live in the fucking and eating state. Like, those are the two most primal states that you can be in. Mm-hmm. Fucking and eating. That's what most people just do all day. And if it's not having sex, it's jerking off. Like, it's the two biggest dopamine hits. There's more to life. Mm-hmm. At some point, sex gets old. No, it doesn't get old. But at some point, brother, like, there's other things to accomplish in life. And that's kind of the things that I'm trying to pursue. So find a good relationship, find a person that allows you to live your life, that allows you to be you. Mm. Set the parameters that give freedom, but do it in a sense of respect, be loyal, have integrity, and ultimately understand where this idea of relationships or dating falls on your list of priorities. But if you're a broke motherfucker, bro, maybe you can't be chasing the women. Maybe you got to be chasing the paper, bro.
Yeah. You have to make that priority.
You have to, bro.
From my experience,
you have to sacrifice.
Yeah. If there's anything which I become obsessed with and I'm like, right, that's on the top. I want to make this happen. Mm. Usually it happens because that's all I'm thinking about.
Yes.
So if you're not becoming, like, for example, my physique, if I was obsessed, I wanted to have the best physique, I go and make it happen.
Yes.
If I get obsessed with, oh, I want to sleep with loads of women, I go and make that happen.
Yes.
If I'm obsessed with making loads of money and building a business, you'll make that happen. So you just need to decide, okay, what is the thing that's going to be a priority?
There's a verse in the Bible that says, as a man thinketh, so is he. So whatever you're thinking about, that's who you will become. Mm. Because thoughts lead to actions. Actions lead to habits. Habits lead to lifestyle. And that lifestyle is what dictates who you are, brother.
Man, I've learned a lot from this podcast.
Me too, bro. I had a great time.
That was good. Where can people find you?
Luke Belmar, all platforms.
You've got the Instagram, you've got the YouTube.
And Twitter. Well. Twitter. Yeah. Twitter, we're out here writing some digital stoic tweets.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter?
I have someone running it.
No, brother. You have a great thoughts,
which I don't like because it's not me, but then I don't want to get too caught up in that. Because there is a lot of negativity in Twitter.
Bro, I don't ever...
You just tweet, that's it.
Tweet? I don't even read, like, quote on people's stuff. Like, I just... My thoughts. It's like a journal for my own things. Naval, you know Naval?
Yeah.
He has a great book, The Almanac.
Yeah.
Most of that book is a compilation of his tweets, which is fucking G. So hopefully someday somebody collects my tweets and there's a little book that we can all reminisce on.
And hopefully he puts out more content.
He's a G, bro. An absolute G.
He needs to get on more podcasts. I know he doesn't like to repeat himself, but... That one he did with Joe Rogan was so good. I listened to it like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, please do another one. But he has his reasons, I guess.
Yes, bro.
Awesome, man.
It's been a good session. Thank you, brother.
Cheers, bro.